From WYPR, I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. We think of ice cream as a summertime indulgence, but year-round, Americans consume about a pint per person each week. Amy Ettinger gives us the scoop in writing her book, Sweet Spot, An Ice Cream Binge Across America. She traveled the country, researching the confection from a founding father's recipe to ice cream made from buffalo milk.
It is much richer than cow's milk, but less rich than traditional ice cream, because ice cream has not just the milk but the cream in it, and this gelato just has the milk.
Plus, Tim Anden of TIC Gums tells us about Ice Cream University. How does the texture and color of ice cream impact its flavor? It's On the Record after the news.
You're listening to On the Record, the podcast, a service of your public radio, 88.1 WYPR. Find more podcasts online at wypr.org. And tell us what you think. Send an email to ontherecord@wypr.org.
Good morning, I'm Sheila Cast. We're On the Record. One scoop or two, cup or cone. You can't go wrong with ice cream, whether it's plain vanilla or an exotic melange of candy and fudge. Even when the mercury isn't pushing triple digits, Americans love their ice cream. The average person in the U.S. eats almost 22 pounds each year. This cool confection has a special power to transport us back to childhood. A soft serve cone with sprinkles may remind us of strolling the boardwalk. A sundae topped with a maraschino cherry takes us to bygone birthday parties. Today we revisit our conversation with Amy Ettinger, author of Sweet Spot, An Ice Cream Binge Across America. When we spoke in 2017, I asked Ettinger why she undertook the quest to get the scoop on ice cream's history.
It was really an opportunity to look at my own childhood, travel back a little bit in time in my own life. Ice cream has always been my family's obsession. We ate it all the time as a kid. And to take that history and mix it with the history of America, because our obsession with ice cream goes back all the way to our founding fathers. So I wanted to look at how it's impacted my own life, talk about the history of it, and also talk to the people who are working to make it every day.
So you use the word binge in your title, An Ice Cream Binge Across America. It's really a bit of a memoir.
It is. There's definitely memoir in there, and it's my own personal experience of going out and talking to the folks who are making it all over the country. And it did feel like a binge, both in the calories consumed and the reporting legwork that I did.
Well, do you feel better having written it?
I do. I had a lot of fun writing it and a lot of fun reporting it, and I met some fantastic characters along the way.
Yeah, you did, and you've written about many of them. Making ice cream from scratch is a very fraught process. You've chased the white whale of the perfect batch. What can go wrong when you're making your own ice cream at home?
Everything. Everything can go wrong, and it has gone wrong for me. So you can learn from my mistakes. But one of the biggest flaws in a home ice cream is when it just becomes that icy block when you put it in the freezer overnight. You know, you've made this delicious batch. Maybe it's your grandma's old recipe, and you took out the ice cream maker and you sat down and you figured out how to make it, and then you set it in the freezer overnight and it just turns into a big block of ice cream. That is one of the most common flaws that can happen.
What did you do wrong to make that happen?
So the thing that can counteract that horrible icy block is adding a little bit of nonfat milk powder to your ice cream. Most home chefs don't do that, but they do it in ice cream shops across America. So you add a little bit of non-fat milk powder, it absorbs all that water, and you don't wind up with that horrible block.
Ah, so the water content of the milk, instead of turning into ice, turns into more milk.
Exactly. And it becomes that scoopable ice cream that we all know and love.
Okay, so that's one mistake you can make. What's your second worst mistake?
So I suffer from horrible impatience in my life, not just with ice cream, but it comes out with ice cream. When you are, you know, pasteurizing your ice cream base on a stovetop, and then you set it in a a bowl to cool, and then you think, oh, I think it's cool enough. It's been an hour or so, and you put it through the ice cream maker. It just never becomes what it's supposed to become because it's not really cold enough, and all the molecules haven't come together the way they're supposed to. So giving it a little time to sit overnight in the refrigerator is one of the other keys in making good ice cream. You just want your base, that ice cream base of milk, sugar, cream, eggs, to become what it's supposed to become in the refrigerator, and then you can put it through the ice cream maker, and it becomes ice cream.
So you're talking overnight. This is not a quick
overnight, which is really hard. I think good ice cream, when you're making it at home, it's like a 2-day process. It really is, because after you're done putting it through the ice cream maker, you want it to freeze in the freezer. And I think that the impatience really sets in people, you know, especially if you've got kids and they're like, I just want that ice cream. You know, I helped you make it, or I watched you make it. But if you can just be patient, it's really delicious.
Words to live by. You write that some of the founding fathers were essentially addicted to this sweet treat.
They really were. I mean, starting with George Washington, he ate ice cream all the time at his formal functions in New York and Philadelphia. He had a 306-piece ice cream set that was found in his estate at Mount Vernon after he died. And he went through the great process of having ice houses built at his estate at Mount Vernon. And it was not easy back then. So he was really the first American president with an addiction to this ice cream. But Thomas Jefferson had it as well. He picked up his addiction in France. And he came back and he recorded America's first ice cream recipe, which was for vanilla.
I alluded to the big debate over who invented the ice cream cone. It seems to come down to two immigrants, one from Syria, one from Italy.
Yes, but most folks point to the Syrian immigrant at the 1904 St. Louis Expo as being the person who was, you know, next to an ice cream maker. He was making waffles or a pastry. And he said, you know, what would happen if I made this waffle into a conical shape and tried to scoop some ice cream on top of it? But when I was doing this research for the book, that was one of those little facts of history that really blew my mind, that it took until 1904 until somebody actually did invent this cone, which allowed people to, you know, take a scoop and then be able to walk down the street with it. And it became so popular because of that.
This is On the Record on WYPR. I'm Sheila Cass speaking with writer Amy Ettinger about her book, Sweet Spot. Many listeners might be surprised to learn a secret you uncovered, that most companies buy the base of their ice cream from other companies. You told us earlier that base is what? Milk, sugar, egg,
cream,
and
yes.
Cream.
And most cases, eggs. Philadelphia they're known for an eggless style ice cream, but most places in the country use egg in their ice cream base. That was really a shocking moment for me when I uncovered that. I was just sitting down with an artisanal ice cream maker who revealed to me, yeah, you know, we're artisanal, but we do not make our own base in the back of our kitchen, nor do most places in America. There are very, very strict pasteurization laws in this country, and it's prohibitively expensive in most cases for small mom and pop shops to A, buy a pasteurizer, and B, to have a permit to have that pasteurizer. So folks buy pre-made ice cream base from different companies around the country, and then they put their own signature on it by adding their own flavors or mix-ins to really make it their own.
In researching Sweet Spot, you took a class in ice cream production at Penn State University, and you learned that ice cream doesn't actually expire, like an expiration date.
Was another shock. You know, I'm a person who I carefully read the expiration dates on everything. And yeah, there is no expiration date on ice cream. The idea being that once you've put it through a pasteurizer and you've processed it and created it, then it's pretty shelf stable. You can keep it around for a while. That being said, you know, if you let it go for more than 6 months or a year, it's not going to taste very good. The quality of the ice cream is absolutely going to decline.
In what way?
Because it's
why?
Well, so there's this thing in the industry called freezer abuse. I'm very guilty of it. When you go into a grocery store and you can't decide what flavor you want or what from what company, and you open that freezer door, you're letting heat in every single time you do it, and it changes the temperature of what's in that case, and it affects the ice cream that's in there. So after time, you're going to get those, you know, horrible ice crystals that form on ice cream. I just absolutely can't stand it when it happens in my freezer. And the quality of the ice cream is going to decline, even though it has stabilizers and it is shelf stable. Heat is the enemy of ice cream, and opening an ice cream case over and over again over the course of a day, week, month, year is going to reduce the quality of that ice cream.
And even the number of times you open your home freezer door is enough.
Yes.
Over time.
And if you have a husband who likes to microwave your pints or quarts of ice cream, then it's even worse. It's it's even a worse form of abuse for the ice cream.
What were some of the wildest flavors you tried?
So I had read about Dolly Madison. She was also one of the founding fathers founding mothers who had an obsession with ice cream. She served ice cream at James Madison's second inaugural ball, and it really was such a hit of the season. But her particular favorite form of ice cream was an oyster ice cream. Hmm. And I read about this and I thought, wow, I think I have to try this, even though it's so different from the usual, you know, butter pecan or Rocky Road I might want. I want to know what it's like. So I found a chef down in Los Angeles who made it for me. He had specialized in making this ice cream in the past. And I tasted it along with an assortment of other interesting savory ice creams he made for me, including Caesar salad dressing and mustard ice cream. So those were definitely on the list of most unusual flavors. I also tried foie gras ice cream in San Francisco and garlic ice cream we have out in California as well.
Did any of these taste good to you?
So I would say that several of them gave me this almost a short circuit in my mind when I was eating them of, I really, as soon as the flavor hit my tongue, I couldn't figure out whether I loved it or hated it. It was this moment of when I think back to my childhood, when I was trying new foods, of just shock. And in some ways that experience was actually kind of pleasurable, because there aren't that many foods that we have as an adult that we haven't had before. And, you know, you get into a rut of just the same repertoire of foods. And so I, for the first time, understood the novelty seeking in ice cream, because I had that sensation of, it was almost a sort of joy of, I don't know how to process this, what's hit my tongue, and I like that.
Also in California, you had the chance to try buffalo ice cream. What did that taste like?
And that was delicious. There was no moment of, oh, I don't know if I like this. There was just, I want this all the time if I can have it. There's a rancher out in Petaluma, California, who has brought out some water buffalo. And it's very unusual in this country to have a herd of water buffalo. They're very, very common in other countries, Asian countries, especially in India. But in California, it's pretty, and in the rest of the United States, it's very uncommon. But he has a herd and he is milking them every day and making delicious water buffalo gelato from it.
Water buffalo milk.
Yes.
And
it kind of tastes like half and half. If you can imagine a really creamy ice cream that's made out of half and half.
So it's much richer than cow's milk.
It is much richer than cow's milk, but less rich than traditional ice cream, because ice cream has not just the milk, but the cream in it. And this gelato just has the milk.
Oh.
It's sort of a halfway point.
That was another thing I learned from your book, though. I sort of think of all cow's milk as being equal. And you said there's a big difference between Holsteins and Jerseys.
Yeah, this. So I went up to Seattle and I sampled some unbelievably good ice cream at Kurt's Farm Shop in Seattle. And he has Jersey cows. We don't see Jersey cows milk very much, or at least I don't. And I was really curious to try it. The ice cream was phenomenal. It was really, really delicious. He has his own herd of them on Vashon Island, which is, you have to take a ferry to get to it from Seattle. And he flavors his ice cream only with ingredients really that he can grow on that island. So it had an incredibly authentic and regional taste to it, and I really loved it.
Well, on that delectable thought, let me thank you for this conversation.
Thank you.
Amy Ettinger is author of Sweet Spot, An Ice Cream Binge Across America, published by Penguin Random House. This is On the Record. Quick break, and then we hear about Ice Cream University and what goes into making a new flavor. I'm Sheila Cass. Stay with us.
Your love is better than ice cream, better than anything else that I've better than ice cream. Everyone here knows how to fight. It's a long way down. It's a long way down. It's a long way down to the place where we started.
This is the On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member-supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. Ever imagine creating your own ice cream flavor? What would it be? Creamy caramel or maybe simple vanilla? What would you add? Ribbons of raspberry jam? Crunchy pecans? Dark chocolate truffles? How about all three? Designing an ice cream flavor requires both balance and a sweet tooth. Marketing that flavor requires a whole other set of skills. This is the kind of inside scoop Harford County High School students gain when they take part in something called Ice Cream University at TIC Gums in White Marsh. In 2017, I spoke with Tim Anden, Senior Technical Service Manager for TIC Gums, which manufactures ingredients for the food and beverage industry. Ice Cream University is run in association with Cornell University and based on their Food Science 101 course. I asked Tim to describe the program.
Yeah, so as a Cornell University food science graduate myself, all of the freshmen that attend the program there basically are given an introductory course in food science that walks them through the commercialization of an ice cream flavor. It's meant to just be a really nice teaser for freshmen who often are taking chemistry courses, biology courses, a lot of prerequisites, but this serves as a entree into some of the more exciting parts of product development for those students.
So that's the 101 course at Cornell, but now you've taken that somehow and made it into a kind of weekend spring learning experience for high school kids from Harford County. Tell us about that.
Exactly. So we really trying to pare down and get a lot of the most important parts of that class. Obviously, it's an entire semester taught at the college level, but we really tried to pare that down and translate it into a 5-weekend session for high school students to really try to increase their interest in food science as a potential field of study. Even when I was at Cornell, which has one of the highest ranked food science programs in the nation, I would tell people, oh, I'm a food scientist. And a lot of kids at the university wouldn't even know that we had that. You know, they think you're a nutritionist or a dietitian or something like this. But really, it's everything that is in between the process of food that comes from a farm and how it gets to our tables.
So that's a lot of boiling down to do into 5 weekends. How do you start Ice Cream University?
So it is a challenge, but really we're trying to give students a taste of entrepreneurialism, a taste of really how to go about not only designing a really good ice cream flavor, but also how you go about marketing that. One of the things that we found, we've now been in our fifth year of the class, was that a lot of these high school students maybe haven't necessarily had the opportunity to present in front of not only adults, but their peers and industry experts. We have professors that come down from Cornell and teach a class about how their actual dairy manufacturing plant is run, and you know we'll teach them about these kinds of things. But you know it's really an opportunity for the kids to follow an idea from its creation stage. You know every week they're trying out new flavors at the end of the class, experimenting with different combinations, how much flavor they need to put into the specific ice cream that they're making. And then they go through and try to develop a marketing plan, very much like you said in the beginning of the show, where if they're going to be making some sort of bubblegum style flavor, well, their marketing plan really needs to be targeted towards kids or it's not going to make any sense. And so, you know, we really try to teach kids a lot about that idea creation process and then how to go about pitching that to a larger audience, very much like a Shark Tank for ice cream.
What do students learn about items added in to ice cream, candy, chocolate, fruit? Mm-hmm.
So this is one of the more enlightening parts of the class is I think a lot of people just think that you can take, you know, normal nuts or inclusions, you know, is the technical term, and you can just kind of put them into frozen ice creams and eat them. But a lot of these ingredients have been specifically designed in order to function well and not break any teeth at those really low temperatures. So we talked to them about freezing point depression and how that works to make things, you know, like chewy caramel that you'll sometimes see in ice cream, to actually make it chewy and not rock solid.
Huh. And what about preventing freezer burn?
So that's actually one of the things that the ingredients that TIC Gum supplies will actually help to control and to address. Obviously, nobody's going to describe ice cream that they like as being gritty or grainy or, you know, having freezer burn. And so things like gums, they come from natural sources like seeds or tree saps. They help to bind up that extra water that would otherwise show up in freezer burn if it's left in a freezer for too long.
You talked about students being exposed to professors who can walk them through a marketing campaign. Part of Ice Cream University is competition. The kids form teams, mm-hmm. design their own flavor, and then present that idea to judges.
Definitely. You know, usually there's anywhere between four or five teams that we've had, just depending on the specific number of students that we've had in the class. But yeah, it's very much a friendly competition because at the end, the winning flavor is actually then produced at Brooms Bloom Dairy up in Harford County. So that students not only get to, you know, have the enjoyment of having won, one of the things that I think is actually a lot of fun for both parents and students is actually going to a real creamery and seeing their actual ice cream flavor be produced, being able to taste it, and, you know, brag to all their friends and family members that this was something that they actually designed.
That's Tim Anden, Senior Technical Service Manager for TIC Gums, which manufactures ingredients for foods and beverages. Here on The Record on WIPR, I'm Sheila Cast. We're speaking about TIC Gums Ice Cream University for Harford County High School students. If we don't particularly like a flavor of ice cream, what might be behind that?
So that's a really good question. And one of the things that we talk a lot about, you know, being a company that says that, you know, our main mission is to work on texture and stability of products. Oftentimes when people talk about not liking the taste of something, really a lot of it has to do with the actual textural component. Yogurt, I think, is a good example to talk about because there's so many different textures of yogurts out there, whether you're talking about Greek yogurt, whether you're talking about whipped yogurt, light yogurt, full body yogurt. Really, a lot of the differences in those specific products is textural related, and that's really where a lot of our materials shine in terms of giving food producers the ability to customize a texture to what is really actually going to drive consumer liking, as opposed to, you know, simply changing the specific kind of strawberry that they might use in a yogurt.
I would think the way it looks is part of it, too.
You know, one of the more fun exercises that we take the high school kids through is really showing them how important the visual aspect of food is. And I think a lot of people are familiar with this based on nothing else than, you know, folks taking pictures of their food and posting to Instagram, or even something like Top Chef, where you're just looking at the food. You're never even tasting it. But people, they eat with their eyes first. And so one of the exercises that we take the kids through is we show them some clear liquids. And we've added some flavors to them. And we take them through this whole process and ask them, what is it that it tastes like? And the liquids, they have different colors in them. So there's a red, there's a yellow, there's a blue, there's a purple. And really at the end of it, we ask them, okay, what does the blue one taste like? And everyone says blueberries. What's the red one taste like? Everyone says strawberries. What's the yellow one? Banana. And we flavor them basically with the same citrus mix. So it's meant to just show people that if you see a certain color, your mind trusts your eyes before it trusts your tongue. And it will tell you basically what it is that you should be tasting over what you know might be true from your tongue.
What trends do you see in the freezer aisles or in small ice cream stores?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of really different trends in the ice cream industry right now, whether it's people going to gelato, trying to get a much more indulgent experience that way, or if they're going in the direction of Halo Top, that is really coming out with a low-calorie ice cream that has a lot of the same textural attributes that regular calorie ice cream has. So, there's really been a lot of diversity in the food industry and in ice cream specifically, trying to meet a lot of different consumer demands, whether it's for clean label or whether it's for other associated health concerns like non-dairy ice creams. There's been a huge resurgence in non-dairy ice creams that, there's been a lot of actually good non-dairy ice creams out there that, we've worked with a lot of these companies, and it'll blow you away to taste some of these. You'd never even know if someone didn't tell you that it wasn't dairy.
I'm not familiar with non-dairy ice creams. What are they made of?
So a lot of times they'll use different kinds of nuts as the milk source. One of my personal favorites is the ones that are based on cashews. Cashews have a high fat content, and so they lend themselves very well to performing similarly to traditional dairy fat ice creams. So really, those products are some of my personal favorites. And if I didn't tell you, you would never know that it wasn't non-dairy.
I appreciate you telling us about Ice Cream University. Thank you.
Thank you, Sheila. Really appreciate your time.
Tim Anden is Senior Technical Service Manager for TIC Gums in White Marsh. We spoke in 2017 about the company's Ice Cream University. On the Record's director and engineer is Nathan Sterner. Maureen Harvey and Melissa Gear produced the program. John Ahrens wrote and recorded the On the Record theme music. Izzy Hedelman is our intern. I'm your host, Sheila Cast. Very glad you've joined us and hoping you will again tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to this segment of On the Record with Sheila Cast. You can catch the show on the radio Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 10 a.m. on 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station. And you can support On the Record and all the other public radio programs that WYPR brings to you. Just click the donate link at the top of WYPR.org. And thanks.